Well, good morning and welcome to Lakeview. My name is Paul. I'm the lead pastor here. If you're new with us, welcome, welcome. It's great to have you. Now, in learning any language, one of the first lessons people are often taught is how to properly reply and engage with a simple conversation. You know, like, how are you? How's it going? I'm hungry. Which way to the bathroom? All those simple things that we need to kind of figure out and learn as we're learning a new language, if you've ever done it, those are the things you start with. And I remember when I was, I remember learning English when I was 12 and my family immigrated to Canada. And I was learning all the appropriate responses that I should have to normal conversations. And it was specifically important because as I learned English and tried to use some of my Ukrainian or Russian words, they just didn't translate straight across very well. For example, often in Ukrainian or Russian, actually, if you ask somebody how they're doing, they will often reply, normal. Yeah, which is like confusing, but makes complete sense in the other language. So I remember, you know, learning when somebody says to me, hi, how are you? An appropriate response for that would be, I'm fine. And you? You know, a simple surface interaction just to keep things civil within the social etiquette of what's going on. And we are taught that. We are all taught that whether you're a new person to Canada or a new person to English, we are taught that from young age to say, you know, like if somebody asks you, just reply, you know, I'm doing good. I'm fine. How are you? We want to keep things kind of on a surface level. And that's all really is required when you're meeting somebody or greeting somebody new. In fact, if you were to ask somebody how they're doing, you don't really have a context or relationship, and they just share a whole bunch of stuff with you right out of the bat, we're pretty jarred by it. We're like, whoa, that was a lot more than I bargained for when I asked you how you're doing. We're shook by it, in fact, if somebody says to us a lot of information when we simply just say, hey, how are you doing? And those of us that have been in romantic relationships will also know if you ask a question, how are you doing, and it's replied with, fine, it often means you have a lengthy conversation coming in the evening. So I find it fascinating how our social conventions, our etiquettes, what they say about us and what they say is important within the culture, right? Every culture has a unique and different social etiquette and social conventions that everybody employs. And so it's super interesting to me what we're trying to say by saying little, right? And what is the underlying message in saying, oh, I'm fine, how about you? What is the underlying message of what we're trying to present and what we're trying to hide? It's an interesting thing to wrestle through and think about, right? Language, culture, and communities form us at the deepest levels of who we are, and sometimes even at the expense of who we are. Each and every one of us is formed daily, intentionally or unintentionally, knowingly or unknowingly. We are formed daily throughout interactions, and we are formed simply by just being born, the DNA that we receive, right? Psychology calls this nature and nurture. And it used to be nature versus nurture, and kind of we're like, oh, I guess it's both. So that's where we're at. There are many things that form us and develop us. Our circumstances, choices, decisions, things in our control and out of our control, we are formed moment by moment. Although I'm a firm believer in the importance of social conventions, I will say our health of our whole self requires us to understand what is actually forming us. What are we actually putting into our lives? What is actually in our past? What are things that we have inherited from our parents? And what are things that we're taking in every day in our lives? It's really important to actually understand what is our holistic person like, being formed knowingly and unknowingly in everything that happens to us. So today we're starting a brand new series I'm calling Deeply Formed, and we're going to look at some of the things that have formed us, some of the things that we know about, and some of the things that we may not know about. Now, in the last little while, we've been navigating through our Lakeview postures throughout the year. In the fall, in our series Back to the Basics, we looked at the backward posture. We looked at locating ourselves in the God story, witnessing God's active work in the world, in and around us. In the movement series, we place ourselves through the outward posture, collaborating with God locally and globally, and observe how the movement of the early church read through the book of Acts, and how the church, empowered by the Holy Spirit, wrestled and acted and confronted barriers in life. And then we wrestle with, what does this mean for us today? So in this new series, we're going to be looking at our inward posture, helping us to engage with our practices of creating sacred space for encountering God. Simply said, we're going to look at what makes us, us. What's all the inner workings of us? And how do we understand them? And do we even acknowledge them? Do we even know what happens to us? Or do we just kind of let the tide of life take us wherever it may go? Now, one of the reasons I studied counseling and counseling and theology, is because I'm fascinated with understanding how fearfully and wonderfully we are all created. There's so many things that make us us. And it fascinated me. So when I was studying theology, after kind of graduating out of that, and I was being a youth pastor, I was convinced I needed to study counseling, just because we're so complex and intricate. So there are five dimensions that make us us, that make us whole people. We're made in God's image. This is the story that we learn from the Bible. There were image bearers of God. And these five things include our physical, our spiritual, our emotional, intellectual, and social dimensions of who we are. We're not just one of these things. We're all of these things, all of them put together. We are wonderfully created with all these making us one holistic person, one holistic people. We are multidimensional, including parts of us we sometimes don't even think about. When we read these things on the screen, we can say, oh, yeah, that makes sense. But there's parts of us we don't really pay attention to, and they kind of just happen in the background of things, whether we recognize them or not. But likewise, ignoring any part of who we are has destructive consequences in our relationships with others, in our relationship with God, and in our relationship with ourselves. Saying this, it's important to know that there are parts, those five that I've listed, there are parts of us that are actually kind of easy to see in people, right? They help us, we know how people appear in the world. And there are things that we focus on, how we appear in the world. And mostly, and this is going to be a broad stroke statement, so like there's exceptions and it could be arguments, but mostly speaking, we tend to think about our physical appearance, right? We think about how we look, how we appear in the world, how we present ourselves, what clothes we wear, what's going on with our hair, those of us that have hair. And secondly, broadly speaking, we focus on our social status in the world, who we are in the world. So how we appear in the world and who we are in the world. These are, broadly speaking, the things that we kind of focus on. This is why adolescence is actually such a hard time, right? Because you're like, your body's changing. You're trying to figure out how you appear in the world. You're trying to figure out which group you belong to. So who you are and how you look is such a big deal. And it's a whole thing. And it's a part that we really focus on. And I don't think it fully leaves us. We actually think a lot about how we appear and where we stand in the world. And it's interesting that those two things actually help form the other things. They kind of feel like they're in the background, but how we appear and where we belong actually begin to form all those other things in us, our emotional health, our spiritual health. They kind of navigate a lot of our appearance and our social standing. So for example, emotional underdevelopment is actually not that obvious when you first meet people, right? You can do a lot of social conventions, you can do a lot of etiquette correctly, but be emotionally unhealthy. Our emotional underdevelopment takes time to show up, but it always does. And it often shows up in our relationships and in the trusted circles we find ourselves in. But if our emotions are underdeveloped, it will show up. And so despite the consequences of it showing up in the worst possible way for us, if it's underdeveloped in our relationships, our inner space, our emotional, our mental inner life, our deepest centers of who we are actually often taught to be kind of ignored, suppressed, don't show anybody. What will people think if they know? What will they think? So we hide it. Until, of course, it comes out in the worst possible way, in the worst possible time. And so emotional unhealth can be only suppressed for so long. In no time was this more obvious that I want to suggest, at least in my frame of view, in my years here on this planet. In no more time was this obvious as it has been in the last 3 years. Our world, our country, our province, our city, our families went through a very tumultuous time. The COVID generation, as no doubt will be referenced as in the history books in time, will look at immense emotional and mental strain that all communities, all families, all churches went through. This time, like no other, revealed that something was actually deeply wrong. Something was really deeply wrong in our world, but something was deeply wrong within us. And when coping mechanisms that we so well developed, all our social etiquettes, all our social conventions, all the way we present ourselves in the world, all our friendships, all the ways we coped when nobody saw us, when all of that was taken away, when all those mechanisms were stripped away, when all that made us us enable us to function in routines and work and life and family, when all of that was stripped away, revealed what was actually happening in our inner life. Divergent thinking and point of views came to the surface quickly. Families, workplaces, churches, communities were quickly and deeply divided. Social media was filled with accusations of each other, who's right and who's wrong, and we all took positions, who was right on the right side of history and who's on the wrong side of history. We began to evaluate what actually mattered to us and who we were in new ways. All of a sudden, that coping stuff was taken away and we're stuck at home and we're thinking like, is this my life? Is this what I wanted? Is this who I was gonna become? All the things began to reveal what was actually bubbling or being suppressed in our lives for a long time. And if emotional health was underdeveloped in any of us, it surfaced very quickly, didn't it? So what's going on? Do we just build new coping mechanisms? Do we just find new strategies to suppress our inner life and just be like, okay, I'll just work it out in this new way? Maybe I'll find a new habit, a new hobby, a new drug. Maybe there's a new way I can just suppress this and kind of function in this new world. Our Christian story tells us that something is wrong. We find the wrongness specifically in Genesis 3, which teaches the human race has been affected by our own sin. That is our brokenness. The story suggests that our choice broke something in us and around us. Our stepping away from God led each and every one of us to be compromised by the devastation of sin, which causes defects in our desires and our behaviors. Our story, our Christian story, goes that the deceived by the seductive promise of becoming gods, first humans turned away from God. They turned away from the source of all that is good, that's true and beautiful, which then left people, and I want us to catch this next part, which left all people ashamed in each other's presence, hostile in approach, and afraid of their maker. This is the Christian story, that something is deeply wrong. There is something wrong around us and in us. This is our story. Our hearts, our inner life, our emotions experience distorted desires for power, pleasure, and privilege, which in turn breeds in us shame, fear, alienation from others, God, and even ourselves. How we look and who we are in the world was driven by desire of power, pleasure, and privilege, which affected and infected who we are on the inside, ashamed, afraid, and alienated. We became divided selves, even at times appearing put together on the outside, all the while spiraling frustrated on the inside. And all it took was a pandemic to help us realize that. One of the turning points for me studying both theology and counseling was realizing the clear connection between emotional and spiritual maturity. I cannot simply develop one and ignore the other. To be healthy, developing both was needed and crucial and necessary. In fact, developed together, they offer nothing short of spiritual revolution, transforming the hidden places deep, deep inside of us. In fact, precisely because we are so wonderfully and fearfully made by God and all of our parts reflect Him, the goal for us is to create congruence within our whole self, inside and on the outside. To do this well, we need to be both aware of our emotional health, paying attention to our feelings, maybe not driven by them, but pay attention to what's going on in us. What are the feelings that are rising up? Why am I sad? Why am I angry? Why am I happy? Paying attention to our relationships. How do we participate in community? And at the same time, paying attention to our contemplative life with God. Both actually go hand in hand. So as we engage in this series over the next 6 weeks, to help us understand what these things are, what are the emotions, what are the things we need to pay attention to, how do we engage in this inner sacred life that we're creating for God, we're going to look at Emotionally Healthy Spirituality book by Peter Scazzaro. It's one of the resources I'll be using for the series. And if you're interested in tracking along, if you're like, hey, this emotional and spiritual stuff, this is kind of resonating already, I'm not really sure what those terms mean, I just encourage you to grab the book. We have it in our bookstore. So if you're interested in it, this is the book that we'll kind of be tracking through and with. So this incredible book is full of very vulnerable stories by Peter, who was a pastor, who found himself emotionally underdeveloped. And despite what appeared to be healthy ministry and healthy family on the outside, inside he was spiraling, angry, and the ministry was teetering on the brink of collapse. His journey and teaching on how to focus on both emotional health and contemplative spirituality is a helpful guide for us and is going to be one of the resources for this series. So as we begin this journey, let us define first and foremost what we mean by emotional health and contemplative spirituality, which Peter Scazzaro describes as emotionally healthy spirituality. And he describes them as such: emotional health, naming, recognizing, and managing our own feelings. Emotional health starts with naming and recognizing and managing the feelings that we have. Not avoiding them, suppressing them, or believing they're not important, but actually recognizing that our feelings are made in the image of God, that God has feelings about things. And so we need to recognize them. We don't need to suppress them. We need to acknowledge them. Then emotional health is also our active compassion for others, seeing the image of God in other people, not just people to use or leverage in our everyday life, but to actively have compassion with everyone we come in contact with. Emotional health also thinks about breaking free from self-destructive patterns, even the coping ones, even the ones that kind of helped us before the pandemic started, to actually recognize that certain behaviors are bad for us and are destructive, and breaking free from them. This is part of emotional health. Understanding how our past actually impacts our present, that we continue our story, that we're part of a journey, and a developing capacity to express our thoughts and feelings clearly, not hiding them, but in the trusted community, being able to have ability to speak our thoughts and feelings clearly. Next also is developing and maintaining meaningful relationships. We need community. We need one another. Accurate assessment of our own strength, our own limits, and even our own weaknesses. And finally, emotional health has to do with grieving well. This world has lots to grieve. And to learn to grieve well. There's more things that make up our emotional health, but these are the ones that are kind of jumping out at me that I would share today. And then contemplative spirituality, on the other hand, is concerned with slowing down to be with God. It's simply slowing down in a busy, hurried culture to create time for God. And it has to do with recognizing and surrendering to God's love in every situation. Scripture reading and meditating on it. Positioning ourselves to hear God and remember his presence in all we do. Practicing silence, solitude, and life of prayer. Finding the true essence of who we are in God. And in participating and living in committed community that passionately loves Jesus. Over the next 6 weeks, we'll slowly unpack these. We'll wrestle with them. We will hopefully be a little bit jarred by them because they should push on things that we've kind of thought maybe, hey, this is like normal. This is social etiquette. What are we talking about here? And hopefully it will make us feel a little bit unbalanced and a little bit uncomfortable as we learn to be healthy together. As we unpack and see how both of these dimensions of who we are different and yet they fully overlap. In the very real sense, both are necessary for loving God, loving others, and to be able to love ourselves well. Emotionally healthy spirituality can only grow out of the ground of God's love. When we are grounded in his love, we are free to be emotionally healthy.
By the way, if you want to get kind of like, I just read a bunch of things here, and if you want to gauge where your emotional health is, if you're like, okay, that sounds good, okay, I think I'm tracking with that part, but like, am I actually healthy? What am I not healthy about? If you really want to kind of gauge where you're at, just go to Costco on a Saturday afternoon, and you will gauge where your emotional health is very quickly. I was in Costco, vulnerability. I was in Costco on Saturday, and I was thinking, man, I'm speaking on this stuff, and lots of stuff is bubbling inside of me. It's my confession to you. So how do we achieve this? How do we achieve emotionally healthy spirituality? How are we to be grounded in God? How do we bring healing and develop our inner and outer life in congruence with one another, that one isn't ahead of the other or one is lacking somewhere? Is it our work? Is it the work of God? Well, the answer is yes. John in his gospel records Jesus teaching us what this kind of looks like. And he says, I'm the true vine, and my Father is the gardener. He cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, while every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes so it will be even more fruitful. You're already clean because of the word I have spoken to you. Remain in me as I also remain in you. No branch can bear fruit by itself. It must remain in the vine. Neither can you bear fruit unless you remain in me. Just before I go on, this is an NIV translation, but the part where it says he cuts off every branch in me that bears no fruit, the translation here in Greek, oh, now I'm blanking on the Greek word. Where's Randy? He can yell out a Greek word for me. Well, the Greek word here actually also means he lifts up, he trellises the branch that bears no fruit. He helps it to come up so it also begins to become healthy. Just a side note. I thought that's very interesting. So Jesus first and foremost reminds us, as we think about emotionally healthy spirituality, reminds us that he is the source of all life. That apart from him, we find ourselves spiraling, seeking power and opportunity, and find ourselves frustrated, achieving nothing. But when we make our home in him, when we abide in Jesus, when we pay attention to all the dimensions we carry, when we understand our holistic image that we bear, we actually become fruitful. So Jesus, therefore, exhorts us to abide, to dwell, to make home in him so that we will bear fruit. Jesus, he reminds us that our spiritual and emotional dimensions, when rooted together in him, help us step into healthy, fruitful relationship with God, but also with others and within ourselves. And it can only begin when we're tethered to the vine of life himself, Jesus. The primary thrust of imagery of the vine is the intimate spiritual union between Jesus and us. A union that goes back to how things were intended to be in the garden before the fall of Genesis 3. The vine, this imagery actually invites us to the way God intended things to be. To fully understand God and ourselves, we're required to make home in Jesus. And this is where emotional and spiritual maturity come together. How we feel and how we act are in need of congruency. We can't act well if we don't feel well, right? We can only fake it for a while, and then it will crash. Being rooted in the vine allows us to learn how to receive grace, but then how to offer grace. Be connected to the vine actually teaches us how to forgive, but also how to be forgiven. Jesus, in our John passage, gives us a picture and a metaphor that when we, like the branches, are rooted in the vine that supplies the critical ingredients for growth and fruitfulness, then we become healthy. Then our spiritual and emotional lives receive nurturing that they require instead of being suppressed, instead of being ashamed of, instead of being hidden. We begin to be fruitful. We begin to be honest with who we are inside and on the outside. Friends, we cannot be healthy if we believe that emotional dimension of us is not important. There's so many times in church we've been taught that it's about the word of God, the facts, community, and yeah, kind of feelings towards the back. We cannot ignore the feeling dimension. We're not driven by it. We're not doing everything our feelings feel, but we need to acknowledge them and understand them. Emotional health concerns itself primarily with loving others. And we cannot do this if we ourselves are not well. How do you love someone when you cannot love yourself? Our wellness is predicated on being connected to the source of life, who not only feeds us, but makes us one in him. I want you to catch this next part that I'm going to say. Jesus is not only a template for our life, he is the source of all life. Emotional health connects us to our interior life, making it possible for us to see and treat others as worthy of respect, created in the image of God, and not just another object to use. For us to do this, this requires self-awareness. That is, knowing what is going on inside of us. To the extent to which we love and respect ourselves is to the extent to which we'll be able to love and respect others. Emotional maturity requires us to pay attention to what is actually going on inside of us and not avoid, suppress, or dismiss, or think it's unimportant. Specifically, because it is a space that not only God cares about, but dwells in. God cares about our innermost you because he's there with you. This work is not selfish, it's not self-absorbed. Emotional health is important because it is not only about ourselves and our relationships, it also impacts our image of God and how we see God in the world. Our deepest hurts, when not examined or understood, could paint a picture of God that isn't congruent with the story of hope, grace, and love. When we're not healthy, we may assume that God is angry and hateful and against us. Our emotional health allows us to see the grace and the hope and the joy that God is presented with in our scriptures. It is vital work. The overlap of emotional health and contemplative spirituality is defined by our relationship with God and how we see and treat people. Both emotional health and contemplative spirituality is creating awareness and ability to respond to the love of God for others and for ourselves in the world. And Brother Lawrence called it this way. He said, "The pure, loving gaze that finds God everywhere." That's emotional health. That's a contemplative spirituality. The pure, loving gaze that finds God everywhere. And Francis de Sales described it as the mind's loving, unmixed, permanent attention to the things of God. My point is this. Our lives and our days, they're formed all the time, whether we know it or not. And our life thirsts for meaning and hope and purpose. And we navigate each day trying and hoping to love and to be loved well. We may use different vocabulary to describe the process, but the longings continue for ourselves and for our world. We are shaped this way. Thoughtful people throughout the ages have stated that what matters most for how life goes and ought to go is what we are on the inside. Let me say that again. What matters most for how life goes and ought to go is what we are on the inside. Isn't that interesting? We tend to focus on how we appear or who we are in the world, but what happens inside of us matters most for how and who we actually become. Things good and bad will happen to us, of course. But what our life amounts to, at least for those of us who reach full age, is largely, if not entirely, a matter of what we become within. This within is the arena of contemplative, spiritual, and emotional health. Therefore, it requires all of our attention, doesn't it? Within our inner life, there are thoughts, feelings, intention, and their deeper sources. The life we live out in our moments, hours, days, years, wells up from hidden depth. What is in our heart matters more than anything else for who we become and what becomes of us, because it shapes us to our core. I believe that powerful breakthrough can happen when we take all these parts of ourselves seriously. When we begin to take all those dimensions seriously, investing in and developing our contemplative spirituality and emotional health together will connect us to the vine, the source of God's love that will set our hearts free to love well. Jesus said, "I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I in you, you will bear much fruit. Apart from me, you can do nothing." Let me pray. God, we thank you. We thank you that you make us fearfully and wonderfully. We thank you that you care for all of our parts when they're developed or underdeveloped, when they're healthy and unhealthy, that you care for all of these things. So God, we invite you in this series, we invite you in this time, and we invite you today to help us note what's going on inside, to begin to create space for you, but also to begin to pay attention to all the things that are bubbling in us, to bring our frustrations, our joys, our anger, our sorrow to you. Help us, God, to see you in all of our parts. Thank you for being good and loving. Thank you for your grace. Help us to receive that grace for ourselves so that we could live graciously. We pray all these things in your name. Amen.